This podcast is brought to you in partnership with the Music Venue Trust. The Music Venue Trust is a UK registered charity which acts to protect, secure and improve grassroots music venues. The Music Venue Trust works to gain recognition of the essential role these venues fulfil, not only for artist development, but also for the cultural and music industries, the economy and local communities. They aim to preserve and improve venues, making them more efficient and improving the experience of performers and audiences. During the COVID crisis, Music Venue Trust mobilised music lovers to support the Save Our Venues campaign, raising over £5 million to support grassroots music venues and prevent closures. They worked hard to try and ensure that venues would survive and be ready to reopen when public health guidelines permitted. Now that some venues are able to reopen, Music Venue Trust is working to revive live, but that does not mean that all venues are financially secure. The next few months will continue to be challenging for everyone, and they will continue to fundraise for the venue support services Music Venue Trust offers, especially for those venues in need of the GMV crisis service. There are some exciting Save Our Venues projects still being worked on, so please do support where you can. Visit www.saveourvenues.co.uk to donate and do your part. Hello everybody and welcome to another episode of We Didn't Know How Good We Had It, and this week I am super happy to be joined by my good friend Andy Hughes from Birthday Cake for Breakfast. How are you, Andy?
I'm good, mate. Yeah, cheers. How are you getting on?
I'm not too bad, thank you. I'm very good. Well, how has the sort of last 12 to 16 months treated you?
It's been pretty non-eventful, really.
Fair enough.
There's not been much in the news, has there?
No, there's a little thing, but I can't really put my finger on it right now. But
yeah, no, it's like, I hate to be that person that says it's actually been quite good. But me and my partner have been lucky enough to have stayed in work, and we've been lucky enough to work from home. And we'd also just moved into a new gaff at the start of the year. So we've got a nice big garden. Recently just got a dog, everything's going well, but you know, we totally don't take any of that for granted and all the rest of it. And you know, it's a horrible situation for a lot of people. So even though we've had it really well, we just count ourselves really lucky.
I think that's it. Like, people need to sort of look at the silver linings that come out of things like this, the time that people are able to gain and stuff like that. So don't feel guilty at all, because a lot of people, you know, would be very jealous, I think, is it? So just run with that. But yeah,
I mean, like, there were points, like, last, because our garden, like, had like loads of overgrown like bushes and stuff. I'll cut this very short. We were talking about before we started, weren't we, about yeah, being in our 30s. Yeah. Like loads of overgrown bushes, and we cut all that back anyway. So when the pandemic started, like, we were having lots of sunny times in the garden and all the rest of it, and I was chatting to someone from work, and like, they'd just come back from Australia and had to quarantine just as the pandemic was kicking off and all the rest of it. And I was like, actually, you know, it's not been so bad. The weather's really good, blah, 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 blah. And I was like, how have you been getting on? And he's like, I live like 10 stories up in the middle of town, and I haven't got a garden or any green space.
Well, and then you like, just said, I'm just going to bite my lip from now on and just like keep
in the background. I was like, sorry, mate, I'm about to go and have a can. Yeah.
Sorry, I can't hear over the sunshine.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, we're just very lucky, very lucky.
I'd say, how has it been sort of on the whole review, sort of journalism, everything side that comes with the Birthday Cake then? How's that sort of been? Because you've had, same as everyone, I guess, a lot of time to consume a lot more art and creative stuff from people. How have you found it, that side?
Well, live reviews have tanked off.
Well, yeah.
almost completely.
You could review a live stream, as we were discussing before all this, but...
Funnily enough, like when it was like all kicking off, we were like, right, well, that's most of content gone. And like Ben, our good friend Ben, who was on the podcast before, is one of the Birthday Cake faithful, our MVP writer. And like he'd got like an email from someone said, oh, guest list to a live stream. And like, he was like, I've just been offered a fucking guest list ticket in these times. And I was like, oh God. And like, yeah, so he has done a few live reviews, quotation marks, for the podcast, for shows that have taken place. But like, there have been times where, like, you know, it's like, fucking hell, am I even listening to new music? Because I've been discovering loads of old bands and stuff. But it's been pretty steady, really. Like, we just did an interview with Field Music over the Blower, which was really good. And prior to the pandemic, we spoke to Baxter Jory, and he was like, oh, I'm supposed to be going on tour, but I don't know what's happening with this coronavirus thing. Mm. And then he released his new album, and fucking the whole
everything
world
off, like, yeah.
stood still.
Everything shut. Like,
yeah. Sorry, by the way, I slipped out an F word.
That's fine. But, I'll click the explicit button when I'm uploading it.
If that's all right, yeah.
Yeah. Sure.
I'll try and warn you next time. But it's been pretty steady. Lots of, like you say, absorbing and discovering new music. So we're still able to, you know, we're still able to put stuff out there, and we're still discovering new music, and there's always album reviews and stuff that we can look at. And luckily for us, people are still getting out there and forming new bands and stuff. So it's been going pretty well.
How did it all start? I mean, I don't actually think I've ever asked you. I've known you for a long time now, and I don't think I've ever asked you this. How did you get started with this? Was it sort of just a love of music through friends and family, and you got into it, or what?
Yeah, kind of. So like, so I really made use of my university degree. So I did TV and radio at uni, and it's really worked out for me. But I was, yeah, so we were going to gigs and stuff in Manchester. And this was probably around the time when Carefully Planned started, or at least maybe the second Carefully Planned festival was on in Manchester. And we just realized that, like, there were all these bands that we were discovering, like Alpha Male Tea Party and Cleft and Axes, who just they were very, you know, early days. And like, you'd Google them and there'd be nothing on these nothing on these bands or anything. It was like, fucking hell, like, not that it was our duty to write about them, but we kind of thought, you know, actually we could do this, and we could write about
fill the gap, I guess, that wasn't there to be filled.
I mean, there was obviously Musical Mathematics, Andy Crowder, but we
big
didn't
up Andy.
Big up Andy, yeah, great guy, but we didn't discover Crowder and Musical Maths for quite a while, because we were kind of just like dipping a toe into that sort of stuff, really. Whereas obviously Ben, who we've spoken about before, he was well into these bands from way back when, so his Brontides and his Blackfishes and all that, so he was well aware of all this, and he kind of like helped ease us into these sorts of bands and such. And for the longest time, whenever my partner would say, like, oh, my boyfriend's got a blog, Vertigate for Breakfast, she'd be like, oh yeah, it's a math rock blog. And everyone would be like, what's math rock? What's math rock mean? And like, the first band that we interviewed was The Computers, who were like, I don't know if you know The Computers.
Yeah, yeah. Like, and then supporting Pulled Apart by Horses.
Really good band.
And saw them at Sunflower Lounge very, very Birmingham, long time ago. Yeah.
Yeah. And like, they're, you know, so far away from math rock.
Yeah.
And I don't, yeah, we were into, like, we interviewed a band called The History of Apple Pie, which is a great name for a band.
Yeah, it is a great name for a band.
And that was a great show, because like 5 minutes into their set, a bloke in the front, and it was a Soup Kitchen in Manchester, 5 minutes into their set, a bloke in the front just dropped and collapsed face first onto the concrete floor.
Oh, God.
And we'd gone over to interview him as well as watch the show.
I thought you were about to say you went over to interview him then. I'm like, that's not a great time, Andy.
How are you? and like... yeah, we went over. Oh, here comes the dog. Hi, George. You can edit this bit out.
We've got a dog, guys. We've got a dog on the pod.
Absolutely soaking wet. Yeah, and this guy just collapsed in the venue. And like, we were supposed to interview him afterwards. And like, we'd only just started interviewing bands. And when I say we, at the time I was doing it with my good friend, well, our good friend Matt. And like, we kind of had to sheepishly go over and go, even though you had to cut your set short by 45 minutes, you're still up for that interview. So we were kind of, yeah, kind of just like feeling our way, just bands we liked, really, and just like, finding those holes that weren't there, as you say, for coverage for bands that we really liked. And obviously there were certain bands, like The Computers were quite a big band, so they were getting lots of coverage, but again, bands like Carefully Planned bands weren't getting much in the way of coverage. And then as we've gone on over the years, we've been getting a bit more out there and getting a bit more, you know, coverage of bigger bands and stuff and doing like festival reports and all the rest of it. And like, I'd always like to think of myself as like one of those gonzo journalists who goes here I am at this thing and, you know, I'm doing this and I'm doing that. And it probably doesn't work out that way, but it, you know, it's like, I'd like to think of like kind of like a down to earth, like take on these sorts of festivals that might not be getting the coverage, you know, that they deserve, really.
Yeah, we're talking like festivals like Trees and Arctangent and festivals that you and I would be big fans of to go to and things that they're maybe getting more coverage now, or I guess mainly because the support that these festivals need and stuff, they're slightly more in the news than they would be or in the public eye. But I suppose back in the day, from like 2013 onwards and just before with Trees, but you could turn up and like you said, be that down to earth interviewer that, you know, doesn't have a big BBC square around his microphone and stuff. And it's like, we have some very, very specific questions for you to answer that can be, you know, boring or interesting. But you can just go up and have a chat with people. And
definitely.
Then like the ASL piece that you do, and I always enjoy reading those, and on what's on Michael Portillo's iPod. I'm always loving that.
Yeah.
But yeah, I really, really loved the blog.
Cheers, man.
I've been a fan for a really long time. You've had so many bands. I sort of like liken it to kind of like what promoters do when they're trying to form a scene or something like that, where you look at these different bands and you bring them together in one place for people to read about. I really admire that. So.
Oh, cheers, man. I mean, I kind of think of it kind of like that kids show Zap. Do you remember that?
Yeah.
It'll be like, you've got in one corner and you and I going, come down here, talk to us. And then in the other corner, you've got like fucking Mutoid Man or Yuck or someone like that. Someone described us once as a zine, like an online zine. And I kind of enjoyed that. I think we were a lot more prolific, I think, when I was... when we were like at these festivals and going around. Obviously the past 2 years have been knocked on the head, and slowly getting into my 30s kind of derails your
adulthood. Adulthood.
Yeah. I mean, like, not to say that I'm not still going out to shows, you know, like 3 days a week. Like there was an awful time, great for the bands, but there was an awful time where, like, because of the cost, I was getting a magic bus there and back to Leeds Monday, Tuesday and Wednesday because there were good gigs on.
Yeah.
But all nights of the week. But like they weren't doing any Manchester shows. So I was like, fuck it, I'll just get on there again. So I was like, fuck it, I'll get on the magic bus each night. Just good to go out there and still be, like I say, this roving reporter type of scenario. Whether or not that comes off in the actual blog itself. But yeah. Like you've said, not to go on about that sort of thing, but like, I remember not making use of my radio degree by doing interviews in places where they wouldn't turn the radio off or the stereo, you know, like the speakers off in between bands and stuff.
Yeah.
But I remember interviewing Alpha Male Tea Party when, Ben had just joined the band.
Yeah.
And like the whole conversation was pretty much like, what we were saying before about like chatting to people in a pub. It was literally like we were all just joking about like the highs of the industry and like, you know, imagining that once Ben had joined the band that they were all on the funny stuff. And like they were just, I think like I would imagine if you were talking to someone who was a bit more, let's say, professional, you probably wouldn't be talking about cocaine, but like, you know, if we were, you know, we were just shooting the shit and it was that sort of thing. So I like the idea that you can just get a band who are uninhibited and you can just kind of get them almost off guard and they can just talk any old shit with you, really.
You mean drunk? Yeah.
Pissed. Yeah.
I feel like the way about it is it's so candid that, you know, it is like having a chat. Like I explained to you before, I love doing this podcast because it's like I'm sat in the pub with my mate having a conversation about bands that we both love and then bringing another one up and bringing another one up and so on. And I can imagine that first chat with the guys in Alpha Male who, you know, we're both huge fans of and good friends with there. it would have been the chaotic good conversation where you could just go in literally any direction and there's not really a way to rein it in.
Yeah, like there have been times where like there have been obviously shit interviews, but it's very rare that like you'll go and interview someone and you won't get at least some rapport and all the rest of it. Like,
yeah,
I remember so the one band where it was like total shit, it was a band at a major alternative music festival that we both go to, and one of the lads didn't take his guitar off for the entire time. They're not from the UK, but yeah, he didn't take his guitar off for the entire time, and their answers were pretty much just like, yep, nope, yep, nope. And it was like, oh great, this is good. And then like everyone like after their set was like, those guys are fucking brilliant. And in my head I was like, shittest interview ever. Do you know what I mean? Whereas, yeah, there are other times where, like, many years ago, Philip from Pause, this Scottish band, was like, really sorry, completely forgot about the interview. Let's go and get half an hour. And we ended up chatting. I missed my last bus because we ended up chatting for, like, an hour and a half and, like, just having this proper, like, you know, off-the-cuff connection. Mm. And, yeah, I like that sort of, again, like you say, pissed chat. But it really works in terms of getting answers that you might not expect.
Yeah. And I guess like the bands like that, you don't want to have this weird sterile conversation that you can just listen to on Radio 6 or whatever. Mm. People like you and I and the people who read your blog and hopefully the people who listen to this like that, like open-minded sort of style of interview. Because that makes you feel like you're there. I suppose that's the beauty of this sort of long form style of reporting, if you will. God, it makes you sound like such a... but it is that, I guess, but it's an insight, like fly on the wall way of listening to it. You know, I'm no Ramesh Ranganathan or anything like that, but you know, it's nice to sort of think that people might listen to it in that sort of style and they go, oh, I'm just hiding behind the sofa, listening to the conversation there. But
yeah. I'm actually
fall a little bit there by describing that they're hiding behind the sofa while I do it.
Yeah. You come out whenever you're ready, mate. It's fine.
Yeah. I'll just
fine.
Ring the bell.
Yeah. But yeah, I mean, like, it also helps like document a period of time. Like, so at the minute, because obviously there's no shows and there's no this and that, we're doing quite a lot of stuff like saying, oh, on this year we went and watched this, we went to Liverpool Psych Fest and got absolutely battered. Not everything is about getting pissed.
No, obviously. It just helps though, I guess. It's just a running theme, that's all.
Yeah. Like, you know, on this year we went to Carefully Planned and we did this and we did that. And like I was saying to you before, I walked past a venue yesterday that's now just a shisha bar and it was absolutely rammed. And when we were going to see bands there, it wasn't rammed. So that's Wall Bar in Fallowfield. No idea what it's called these days. But like literally we lived down the road, a group of us, and then we would literally walk over to Wall Bar, have a pint of what was new at the time, Brooklyn beer.
Oh, yes.
And we were like, fucking hell, what is this? And
it's a taste sensation. No sponsorship.
Yeah, sorry about that. If they do want to send me a case, though, that's fine.
I'll see what I can do.
But like we would go in there and like downstairs was like a tiny venue. I bet the bands who played there thought it was a shithole, but like we saw like Clef down there, we saw Axes down there, and these were incredible like formative shows for not only us as like, you know, a blog, but also just as us as like the sort of stuff we got into and all the rest of it.
Yeah.
And like they probably played to like no, you know, no one. But to us, this place at the end of the road was just incredible. And all these bands that were coming down there were incredible. And like there was a band, again, so I was walking down the same stretch of road yesterday with the dog, Adult Life. And it's changed. It used to be called something like the Ramshackle Pub. And now it's called something like Fiery Jacks or something like that. And we saw Cleft in there and either Trojan Horse supported or Trojan Horse were just there in attendance. And it was literally a stage that was could just about fit John on it. And Dan had to stand on there as well. Yeah. And we just discovered him. I don't even think the, like, there was, we were nowhere near the album at this point. You know, Bosch was just like proper far in the distance.
Yeah.
And yeah, we just saw him perform on this tiny stage in this pub that was empty. and it was really early in the evening, if I remember correctly. And the only people there were like Trojan Horse, Dan and John, and like us Birthday Cake Collective.
Yeah.
And it was like, yeah, it was just very strange. Because to us, it was, you know, it was really exciting and it was ace that we were getting to see all this. But at the same time, can't imagine what it was like for Clef. But they thought, what a fucking waste of time. But yeah, like to us, it's like a formative period, you know, of our lives. It was particularly, yeah, particularly great.
I think it helps, if you don't mind me saying, is the people that you meet sort of shape the way that you think about stuff. Like John and Dan are, you know, absolutely amazing people. And the guys in Trojan Horse, Nick is an absolute legend. So if you have those first good experiences with those acts, like you said, they may have thought, oh, this is a waste of time. There's three people here and there's two guys who pretended to be journalists. like to them, you're right. It might just be like, this isn't quite that. But to you, that was like, they were the right people to me at the right time. And it built on from there. Like I had the same when I first met Dan and John. I think we did Cleft and Alpha Male tour. I think it was the second Alpha Male show I'd been lucky enough to put on. And like meeting them, it's the same, like they're like these two like filthy riff beasts, basically, John and Dan. And then, you know, and yet speaks to them after and they're like, oh hey man, it's really nice. Like, and then there's like kind-hearted couple of guys. And they can spend hours with you just like shooting the shit and having a great time with them. But I guess like you've had the pleasure of meeting so many artists and things. I guess like you can draw a path. Like you said, you're going back and doing your snapshots of when you met XYZ or went to XYZ festival. That's kind of a bit like what we're doing now, where we're talking about bands that, you know, aren't together anymore. You can have like a bit of a reminisce where you go, I remember the first time I saw this band and the first time I saw that band or first time I discovered it.
Yeah. Well, like I'm sure you're the same, like, because I mean, I hate to say it, but you know, you get these things where they're like, who was your first album and who was your first, and open brackets, my first album was a Backstreet Boys album, happy to admit that.
Amazing.
That I purchased, I think, anyway. But like, yeah, you can imagine where you were. Sorry, not you can imagine. You remember where you were. You can imagine whatever you like.
Yeah. You can imagine that your first record wasn't a Backstreet Boys album.
So. Yeah, definitely. But I wouldn't change that. but like, yeah, you can remember like where you were for certain things. So even though like some of these bands are still together, like I remember, so I'm a big USA Nails fan. And I remember vividly going to watch them at Arctangent, and I've talked about this on Birth to Cake quite a lot, but we went to see them at Arctangent, and I think they played at like 11 a.m. and they're like a proper horrible band,
yeah,
in terms of like, you know, not only like
volume and harsh noise, like,
yeah, exactly. And like we went and watched it, and like some of the group were like, this is brilliant, love this band, and they just released a new album which me and Ben purchased from the merch literally at the festival. But like some of us were like, this is amazing. Some of us were like, I'm going back to the tent. And like it didn't resurface. And like I just vividly remember it so much. I don't know how many people were there because it was early, and I'll admit in later years I've missed the first couple of bands because I've been asleep. you know, having got to the tent very early in the morning. But like and funny story about that as well, where we'd bought the vinyl, and I took it and I was really careful, put it back in the tent, whereas Ben went back to the tent, got it out to look at it, and was like, you know, mixing it and like all sorts of dash, and like got the cardboard soaked and stuff. But yeah, like just remember vividly like that sort of, you know, where we were stood and all the rest of it. And a band who aren't together anymore, which, you know, works for this podcast, of course, but isn't on my main list. It was a band called Nitkowski. And we saw them at Arctangent as well. And like we arrived and we asked our friend Al what they were like. And he was like, oh, they're just four blokes from London. I was like, oh, that's perfect, mate. Yeah. And like, they were all like, they just look like, except for the keyboard player, I must admit, cause he was kind of like a reasonable, he just looked like a normal fella, but like, the other guys were just like, they all looked like they'd just come from work. Like the one guy was wearing like a shirt and trousers, and yeah, they just looked like, they looked like they didn't want to be there, but I'm sure they did.
Yeah.
And like, it was just the most like, you know, like pulverizing, like harsh noise rock. And it was just like, yeah, it was just like particularly full on. This was mid-afternoon, so at least they had like quite a big crowd. And like everyone in our group didn't know who they were. And we're like, this is exactly, you know, exactly what we're after. And like Nick Duke was with us from Trojan Horse, and he was like, fucking hell, that was exactly what I needed. Because those festivals can occasionally, you know, drift into, if you've seen 10 math rock bands in a row.
Yeah.
And like, yeah, we
watched almost like a musical sorbet.
Delicious, yeah. For a bit. And yeah, we watched the band and we're like, they were amazing. That was brilliant. And like, they looked like hard bastards as well. And I kind of like that in a musician, someone who looks a bit hard. Mm-hmm. And yeah, like they played and everyone was like, fucking brilliant, that. Can't wait to see them next. They split up after the show.
Oh.
And it was like, that was perfect. Do you know what I mean? It was like, played, everyone loved it. We remember it so vividly. And then they split up. Brilliant. But yeah, as we were saying, like, you know, these sorts of moments, like Captured in Time, and like just can draw a roadmap of like, just like bands and remembering a place like post-war Glamour Girls in Leeds, and seeing like their big triumphant show for their album launch, and then played Manchester a few months later, and we'd interviewed them and stuff, and they were like, oh yeah, it's definitely not going to be, you know, our swan song. The album was called Swan Songs, and then they split up after that, and it was like, fuck. Yeah, so it is, yeah, it helps. I mean, even though I've still got it upstairs, thankfully, it is good to have it kind of documented. So just for, you know, readers out there, if anybody does read it, but like also like a documentation of, you know, kind of like a scrapbook almost.
Yeah, sure. I mean, you talk about Manchester a lot. Let's talk about, because you sort of want to sort of piece a couple of bands together that are on your main list. And we've got an amazing list of honorable mentions that I'm sure that we'll both keep picking up on.
Yeah.
But yeah, let's talk about your sort of time in Manchester, because you made it sound to me like it's really important to you, sort of growing up and getting like, growing up into like the music that you're into, and like you sort of get that next step in like either your career or in your interest in something. But yeah, let's talk about, I mean, I'll let you take it away actually. Yeah.
I mean, I don't know what, like, I really fear that, like, I'm, the past 2 years obviously haven't helped, but I really fear that, like, did you ever get that feeling like you're kind of drifting away from something? Not in terms of, like, the blog or anything like that, but, like, there's lots of things going on in Salford, which is just next to Manchester, well, it's part of Greater Manchester, and, like, there's lots of stuff going on in there, and you might not even hear about, like, a night that's happened, and it sounds incredible, and you're like, I didn't even know about that. Whereas like 6 years ago, I might've been, you know, dead on it.
They don't want people in their 30s at cool things. That's what it is.
Those shows will be full of people in their 30s. But, but like, yeah, like it just at one stage, it was like, yeah, you were just finding all these cool little venues. So like sometimes you'd go and see Piles of Clothes, for instance. And he was playing at a place called Cord, I think it was, or similar. And that's literally just a bar in the Northern Quarter. And it was like the perfect place for him, but it was like, you know, the size of a living room. And that's obviously no slight on him. It's just the way it was, you know, booked as part of the festival. But there was just, I think festivals like Dot to Dot and Carefully Planned particularly helped with that sort of like, helping you discover not only all these bands, but all these different venues as well. And yeah, it was just very, very formative for us. In just discovering all these new bands and such. And like you can occasionally, I've been guilty of it, of either slipping into pissed mode where you can't remember anything, or slipping into journalist mode where you're like, you know,
I'm gonna ask every question that I can possibly ask.
Yeah. But like, literally, you know, like the vibe of your podcast, the amount of times, like, obviously a lot of venues are going through a lot of shit at the minute, but like the idea of going, right, I'm going to go to Gorilla in Manchester and I'm going to stand side stage because no one ever goes there, and I'm going to be within, you know, like a breath of some artist that I'm a huge fan of, like like just incredible memories that like stick with us of going to see Parquet Courts and Gorilla in Manchester, and like walking in, and like you ever have that feeling where you walk into a gig and it's like something off a film? Like yeah. you push through the doors and everyone's already well into it, and the band are already well into it, and just about being able to squeeze in there and being able to watch this stuff. And like, yeah, it's literally, yeah, not knowing how good we had it. to borrow a phrase.
I think it was Tom from Goddamn put it that I've basically given myself the worst job in the world, is to discover all these bands that aren't together anymore, because I'm never going to be able to see them. But I love hearing them from people like you and people like him, where you've all got different stories to tell about them and reasons as to why they mean so much to you. But I mean, we can probably all put ourselves in Andy's shoes in that time where, so you walk through into a venue and like the support band's on, you're like, you clock the bar, your senior mate is waved over you, he's gone 2 pints please, and you're like, I miss that a lot. I suppose we all do miss that a lot.
Yeah,
but
yeah,
we'll get it back soon, and I think it's the
fingers crossed, mate. But like literally, yeah, I mean, definitely took it for granted that like 1 minute you could be, and this is in no way, you know, going like, oh, I was backstage, blah, 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 because like, you know, not that life, but like would, you know, 1 minute, you know, 1 week you're going backstage to interview Jamie Lemon at the Deaf Institute. And like the week before that, you're watching some like American punk band play the Deaf Institute, and you don't think about it. You just go like, oh, what am I doing Thursday? Oh, I'm going to go and see Mannequin Pussy play the Deaf Institute with Priests, and I'm just not going to think anything of it.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, when you get the brakes put on, it is kind of crazy. But like, even, you know, from our like going to as many shows as possible, like we went to see, I went to see a band called Priests, who are like, who were a Washington DC hardcore band. Mm-hmm. Well, not hardcore, like a punk band, post-punk. And they played Gulliver's in Manchester, which is another great Northern Quarter venue. And they played there the day after the Manchester bombing at the arena.
Yeah.
And like, it was just such a crazy, like, everyone was kind of like, you know, looking over their shoulder. Not that that would do any good, obviously, but yeah. It was just such a crazy thing to for everyone to get together and experience this. And yeah, like you say, fingers crossed, you know, we'll be back in those sort of situations again, yeah, where we've got like the culture coming together and such.
Yeah. I think everyone will jump at it when it's safe, obviously. Like, I don't want anyone to be making any rash decisions, but when it's safe, get your jab. let's go to some gigs and stuff. But let's talk about a few bands from this list then. Actually, we talked about Manchester because you said you kind of wanted to pair these two bands together because they meant more to you then, but that was sort of a time in your life where they sort of came about. But yeah, take it away.
Well, I suppose with the first band, so it was a band called Flesh. Who
not to
were
be mistaken with the black and death metal band that I had earlier on, that the same name.
Yeah, I mean, like we said, we could talk about them for hours, but so Flesh were like a Manchester band. I think a few of them were from Stoke, but they were based in Manchester, and they were just, it's a funny one. I can specifically remember like a period going back to Carefully Planned again, like they used to do things like they'd announce on their Facebook, oh, so-and-so's dropped out, they couldn't play, we're going to put on so-and-so, they're playing The Castle in 5 minutes, and you'd be the other side of town and you'd be like, shit, I've got to go and run over. And like, I remember watching Flesh's first show, I think, at Carefully Planned at The Castle. And like The Castle, I think the capacity is 80, but you could probably get like 50 people in there because it's so tiny. And there was like 6 people in there, and it was really, you recognize when an empty venue is empty, don't you?
Yeah.
But it was because they'd announced like 5 minutes before the show that they were going to be there. And yeah, they were just like, they were kind of like a Madchester band. In a sense, like they were a bit of like, they really leaned into that Madchester sound, and like that laddie aspect. Like I think we were discussing before, like they had like, they still had that indie aspect, and like there was kind of like a bit of a Darwin D's vibe, but they were just like very like a 90s style band, even though they were, you know, people like our age. And yeah, they were just, it's hard to describe really, other than that. Yeah, they sounded like a Manchester band, but it was completely knowing. Do you know what I mean? So like there are still, as I say, Manchester bands today who will be aping Oasis and not know it. And they'll be like, you know, wearing the John Lennon specs, playing that sort of music.
Totally unique look.
Oh, totally. Yeah. And like there are bands still there today and they're playing venues in town that you don't hear about, but people love that sort of thing. And there's no problem with that.
Yeah.
And you know, by all means, you could go to Liverpool and watch a skiffle band play, or you could go and watch bands at the Cavern all day. Mm. Not our style, but with Flesh, yeah. So they had like this sort of like arms aloft or outstretched rather, like, you know, Manc thing going for them. And like they were all just like really good musicians. Like John, the drummer, was from a math rock band called Pedro Donkey, who were really good. They were like another band that you could pinpoint on the roadmap, who were like really like there in the early days for us. And just, yeah, it seemed like they were starting to make like a bit of a thing for themselves. Like they supported that band Peace, doing a residency at the Deaf Institute around Christmas 5-6 years ago. Mm-hmm. And like Flesh supported them like every night, I think. And it was almost like, because obviously with these Peace shows, it was getting all the kids out. And I say that as someone who was in their mid-20s and like was anyway. And yeah, it was just strange seeing like all these kids come together, and you thought like this could be something that propels them to this next sort of stage, you know what I mean? Even though they are kind of taking the piss. So like the video,
you said they were like really self-aware and stuff, you run about like they knew that they were good, but they were also self-aware with the whole Manchester side to it and the arms aloft sort of thing. You're like, they know what they're doing. They're good at it. They know what they're doing.
Definitely. Like the guitarist before he moved on was like, he'd play like these really like hilarious, really great, but like really hilarious guitar solos. And they'd be like proper, like, you know, like proper rock and roll guitar solos, but they fit rather so well in these like really like anthemic tunes. And it was like, you might not say, you know, I'm going to listen to that sort of style of band, but with Flesh, it was just like, because they were so knowing and because they were from these various backgrounds, it was just so like, yeah, it just captured a moment for our friendship group, at least, that really makes us realize that it was such a shame when, like, you know, I don't know if they actually split, but they just stopped, as is often the case when a band lives on the internet, disappears after a while. But like, I've still got a copy of two, at least, of one of their CDs that they released that had like the singles on. And it was like, it didn't have a cover or anything. It just had like a bit of tissue paper, like toilet paper, with like their stamp, their logo, like imprinted on it. And it was like, and like, I think the backing of it was like an N64 magazine, like, cut out.
Just a cut out from it.
Yeah. And it was like, it was just piss take, but like, you could easily go and watch them and go, this is fucking brilliant.
Yeah.
I'm taking it all at face value. It's amazing. I love this sort of sound. And they could have easily, done really well, I think. And yeah, who knows what's happened now. But in fact, I bumped into the drummer in Morrison's the other week, which again is been adult life.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was, they just captured a specific time in our lives. And yeah, it was just great.
Nice. Well, like I said, I'm glad that there's bands out there, or there were bands out there that, like I said, are super self-aware. They know they're just having a good time. That's what matters with it at the end of the day. And then success or fame or whatever anybody wants to call it sort of should always be second to having a good time, in my opinion, at least. Like, fame was probably absolutely amazing and I'm just totally underselling it there. But, you know,
I think that's this problem with the circles we mix in, really, isn't it? Like, we're watching these bands and like, you go, oh yeah, 100 cap venue, brilliant. And like, there'll be bands like the aforementioned Manchester bands who are still knocking about aping Oasis, who will be like, ah, oh, fuck that. But like, I think that was the main thing. They were all just like so sound and so down to earth, and they kind of knew it was a bit of a piss take, but the songs were there, and like, obviously, as we said at the start, they were great players as well. So it was, very easy to get caught up in it.
So who else have we got on the list then? Another Manchester, but another band that you said that meant a lot when you were living there.
Yeah. So Tall Ships were another band. Obviously, you are a fan, and they were like a similar time, like very formative. Like we caught them around, like, you know, the early Art Tangent days, the early 2000 Trees days, and we just seemed to like travel to see them so often, and they just captured a certain period for us around like those early Carefully Planned festivals. I hope that I've got that right, because I swear they played quite a few Carefully Planned festivals. But like, I remember seeing them at Night and Day Cafe in Manchester support a band called Maps and Atlases. Mm-hmm. And Ben was like, give us an elbow in the ribs and was like, these lads are fucking amazing. Again, sorry, I'm swearing so much. Oh, and
I'm not bleeping it out, so say what you like.
Oh, good. It's all this red wine. And like, it was like, these guys are amazing. And like, old hat to people, you know, like yourself, who are like musicians. And like, nowadays we know all about this sort of thing. But at the time, just moving to Manchester, fresh faced and all the rest of it. And like,
no beard, no long hair.
And like, you know, going, oh, who's this band called? The Smiths, they're amazing. But like, Rick, the guy up front for Tall Ships, the guitarist and all the rest of it, and the vocals, was like, he had like a loop pedal, and he did loads of stuff with loop pedal, and it was like, it's like, fucking hell, this guy is, and then like, you discover
genius.
Yeah, it's like, what, how is he, you know, like someone takes a photo and you're like, they've captured my soul. And like and it was the same with Brontide. Like, I remember seeing them and just being like, this is insane.
Yeah.
When in reality, these guys are like, who's that dickhead down the front?
Who's that dickhead enjoying us?
Yeah. But like, just remember seeing it and just being completely blown away. And the songs were so like, that first album, Everything Touching, it just really, you know, held such a place for me. It was just like, so like moments of like, you know, moments that were proper anthemic, and like moments that proper really hurt you, moments that really hit you, you know, like internally. And
they can
like,
hurt you as well. Like, songs are there for emotions.
Hey, I mean, look, if you want to get hurt by your music, that's fine.
But like, yeah, noise rock show.
if we'd listened to that version of Flesh that were from Germany or wherever they're from,
they have to be European.
Yeah, that could hurt you. But yeah, like, and Tall Ships, like, we just seemed to, follow them around the country. Like, I remember a particularly great show at Sunflower Lounge in Birmingham. And you know what that was like when it was busy. And this Tall Ships show was, like, completely rammed.
People up the stairs, like.
Exactly, yeah. And, like, am I right in thinking that there was a bar, but it was at the back of the room?
Yeah.
The alternative option was climb the stairs and get pints that way, was that
and,
right?
And try and come down the other way, down the other stairs. Yeah, I think it was when I saw the there and Al, they'd set up on stage and everything was great. There was probably about, I think the Sunflower Lounge is 120 cap. I don't know how, probably they can fit about 80 people on the stairs, but Al, like the second they started, was like, fuck this, the stage isn't big enough. And he just went and stood on the bar and extended the microphone stand. And I'd taken a few friends with me and we were stood right at the back of the bar going, I know it's going to kick off down the front there. We'll leave it to it. And then next thing we know, we were basically at the front because Al was stood on my hands on the bar and trying not to kick my pint over. But a good, great venue that, actually.
Yeah. I mean, there's a lot to be said, isn't there, for bands where someone goes, they go in the crowd and you go, right, well, I'll stand here. And then you get the abuse. Like, love that.
It happens with like Baby Godzilla shows and Pull the Puppet Horses shows and all that sort of stuff. Like, you go, I'm not sure where the front's going to be anymore.
Well, we went to see a band called Scholars Sound Control, which is another much missed venue, luxury apartments now, which is great. But we went to a band called Scholars, and a friend of ours was like, I'm going to stand at the bar because I don't want that sort of getting in my face routine. Yeah. He was like, I've seen it, you know, I get it, I don't mind it, but I don't want it. And then like the guy just made a beeline for him because I think he was by himself and just stood on the bar and was shouting in the guy's face. And it was like, I love that sort of like, not, it's not a dickhead move, is it?
It's probably it's just the singer's like, move.
Yeah, I want to get you involved because I'm having fun, you're having fun, all the rest of it. But yeah, I do like that sort of behavior.
Just, just to bring up another band that aren't together that I want to get back together at some point is Falls.
Yeah, yeah.
There's always like that Falls shows, and I've got, I won't go into now, I've got a thousand stories with those guys, and they're all absolutely lovely people. But that was what it was. They would go to a show and they would get you involved, sometimes whether you wanted to or not. And that was the best. It was the best when you saw like Martin go, you could see him point at someone and they're like, uh oh, here we go. Yeah. And next thing you know, he's put his guitar around them, and then they're basically part of the band. I miss all that. That's what I miss about shows, that all inclusive, get involved sort of level.
I feel bad for bands like that who got in amongst it, because imagine just trying that now for like...
Oh, God, yeah. You have to play behind like a completely plastic shield.
Yeah. I remember seeing Falls at the Castle, and like Ben like walked through the venue to outside, and I was like, oh, you know, when this was my enthusiastic time in my life, and I was like, that's gone. And like he like walked through the bar, and Castle's like a busy bar, like walked through the bar topless with his bass, and then was just like out on the street, and the venue's like dark as anything, and he just walked through the venue out onto the street, bright like sunshine and everything, and like was just playing bass. But obviously like a few of us followed him and were like, yeah. But then you couldn't hear anything
because he was just him, quiet bass guitar right in the
moment. Just him outside going, like breathing heavily because he was playing, you know, so furiously, and he'd been all around the venue. And it was like, it's kind of nothing happening here, is there? So like we all, including him, just kind of like walked back into the venue. But
I remember a great time. I was lucky enough to go to Focus Wales with them and do merch for them and tech for a bit. And they played, I can't remember what the venue is called, but basically it's a nightclub. Like it's got mirrored walls and it's got a pole that they had to take down so the band could play on stage. And it was upstairs, this double flight of stairs. And halfway through the set, in typical Falls fashion, they'd found everything that they could climb on and they'd done it. And Martin and Ben disappeared outside. And then people ran onto the stage to look out the window what they're doing. And Martin was riding a giant biffer bin down the hill whilst playing his guitar. And I was like, I knew what they were like. I'd spent a lot of time with them, but that was almost, to me, it's like the pinnacle of a Falls show. It was like he's risking his life there. And it's absolutely incredible.
They were some crack a band, weren't they? Yeah.
Sorry, I've gone off a tangent. Let's go back to Tall Ships.
Yeah, I mean, just going back to that though, I would love to see Falls play a show with did you say it was a stripper pole?
Yeah.
Yeah, a stripper pole with them lads. That would have been brilliant. But I mean,
Phil's got the looks for it. He can take
Phil and Steph are athletic. They could do it. I'm not
saying about Ben and Martin.
Not saying anything against Ben and Martin.
I'm tagging them this.
Ben and Martin could do some moves on that, for sure. But I always remember they did an ASL feature for us, and we always ask people about like what their worst injury is. And the reason that I didn't include Martin in that is because I'm fairly certain he told the story where he stood on like one of those small round tables that they have in bars, and he stood on one of them, and obviously it went from under him, and like he landed side first on the...
Oh yeah, and he ruptured his kidney or his liver or something, didn't he? Or
something harsh,
terrible went bad. Yeah,
amazing. What a guy.
Rock and roll. And he's got two lovely kids and a wife, and yeah.
What a guy. What a guy. But he, not he, Tall Ships. So like, yeah, we follow them around. Sunflower Lounge, we went to see them. Really tight, really packed in. And they'd written their set list on a pita bread, which we thought was very funny.
Nice. I bet you still have that pita bread, don't you, somewhere?
I've still got a photo. and like there was a moment where someone's keyboard knackered up during it, and like all you could hear was the drums on their song Best Ever, and it sounded particularly brilliant, and like it was just very raw, and it was like, you know, I remember me and a friend were there, and like we still, you know, recount that memory, and like just that such a brilliant show, and he'd been to so many of those shows of theirs, and just like at that point they just particularly meant, yeah, a lot to us. And as I say, that record was not hurting us, but it had like all the highs and lows emotionally. And yeah, it was like, it was, they kind of, it kind of didn't take off for him for the second album. I think it kind of like the time for not to go business industry and all the rest of it, but the time for a deal kind of passed, I think.
Yeah.
And even though like I'm sure they were mega chuffed with the second album, I don't think they were as chuffed as they wanted to be. Like, yeah, I think things started to dwindle not long after that, but still got a really fond memory of, we went to see him at Deaf Institute again, another venue that we'd love to go back to in Manchester. And like, it was, I think they did a farewell tour or something like that. And like, it was almost like it was back to how it was around the time of Everything Touching, and they were back to this band that we'd held so close to us. It was obviously really gutting that they were bringing things to a close, and like, obviously really gutting that maybe the second album hadn't done as well as they'd wanted it to. But yeah, it was just, it was like a perfect send off really. But at the same time, you know, going back to those times where we'd see him like every other week and we'd travel down to see him in different venues across the land, it was, yeah, it was just a special time.
It's great to hear. Like, I remember the first time I was supposed to see Tall Ships, which always seems to wind up my friends. Now, I can be honest with you, I'm not a huge fan of Tall Ships. And that's down to me, because I've not given them the time. Like, every song I've heard by them, I've liked. But I think because of this one experience, I've not quite grasped it. And it was, I think it was the first or second year of Arctangent. And I'd had a few, many beers. And I was looking at my lanyard and my friends were going, oh, we're going to go see Tall Ships. Meet us there. And I was like, yeah, cool. I'm going to go grab a pint, go to the loo, and I'll meet you there. And I read the lanyard wrong and went to the wrong stage. And I was, like, stood in, I think they were playing on the second stage, I think it was the second biggest one.
Yeah, I think I remember it.
And I'd made my way over to the Bixler stage, which is like the small tented one. And it was like, none of my mates are here, what's going on? And I was like, one of like three people stood in the tent going, this is a bit strange. I heard there's some good things to go on about Tall Ships here. And this guy in a, what can I describe as like a crow outfit, came out on stage, and then like another 400 people appeared behind me, and I was at the front of this gig. I was like, Tall Ships are weird, man. Like, I don't understand this. And it turns out it was Nordic Giants. And I just stood through Nordic Giants. I mean, Nordic Giants, they blew me away.
Yeah.
But in my head, I was like, this isn't Tall Ships. This can't be Tall Ships. I heard they're like this nice euphoric band, like verging on like that mid-2000s indie that we all love, like with the strangest that we adore there. And I just watched a man on a laptop dressed as a bird for 45 minutes. And I mean, like I said, enjoyed every minute of it, kind of confused by every minute of it. But in my head, I've always been like, I missed out on that time where I had to see Tall Ships for the first time and then really absorb that and go, right, there we go. Now, my friend Connor Couples hates me that I don't like Tall Ships, because he absolutely loves Tall Ships. I think they're easily one of his favorite bands. So I'm throwing it there. I apologize to Connor for not liking it. I apologize to you as well, because earlier on you did say I was a fan. I just had to keep my mouth.
Oh, yeah. Sorry, mate, because you did mention them. But like, I'm pretty sure it was either that one or a year afterwards, someone proposed during one of their songs, which is particularly like, there's a bit like, it's got like a really like, not drawn out, but it's got like quite a long intro. And then like when it proper comes in and it's got like, you know, for an Arctangent crowd, it gets everyone going. And I think someone had proposed during that, like just before that bit, because, you know, it's so like heart swelling.
There's the build, like, yeah.
And then it was like, he was laughing like the Rick on stage and like, yeah, like just kind of trying to sing this intro. And then after that, it was like, duh, 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 duh. And everyone was like, fucking yeah, someone's getting married. And yeah, it was great. Although to add to, this might help with your dislike of them. So I hold no ill will, but my friend still laughs about this. So we saw him at Soup Kitchen, and this was just around the time they were doing the second album. And in hindsight, I can probably understand why they were so happy to have to speak to me again. But like, I'd like, interviewed him before, and then I was due to interview him again because obviously they were coming up with the second album and they were 20 minutes from the house. And interviewed him before Soup Kitchen, and then they played a gig downstairs and all the rest of it. And then they played Bristol the same week, I think it was, and the same mate bumped into him, and he'd kind of like been chatty with him as well. And like the one was like, oh yeah, we got interviewed yesterday by your mate. And he was like, proper aggressive, didn't like it. And I was like, when I heard it, I was like, what? It's like, I thought I was licking their, you know, respective what have yous. And like, he was like, oh yeah, proper aggressive. And I was just like, when I heard it, I was like, well, that shit.
They're from down south though, mate. Like, they don't
soft.
Soft. I didn't want to say that. Yeah, the soft lads, I think, is what the Northerners would say. But yeah, I think that's what it is.
Us Midland boys,
exactly. See?
Solid. So
we're hard. We know what we're doing.
We're hard. We know what we're doing, which is the crest of the West Midland. But yeah, it just always made me laugh that. It was like, because I don't know if I interviewed him after that. Again, probably not. They said not never again.
Did you go in shirtless and be like, right lads, let's fucking have it?
I was like, oi. Yeah.
Remember me.
Yeah. But like, yeah, it just made me laugh because I was like, fucking hell, brilliant interview. Yeah, put that one down, all the rest of it. And then it was just like, oh yeah, a bit aggressive. Yeah. He was this, he was that. And I was just like, bastard. But like I say, no ill will, and they were really good. So yeah.
Well, let's move on. There's a band called Duds, which I do remember you talking about quite a bit and sharing quite a lot of stuff about them. And they've got this, not to sort of take any words from you, you probably may say the same thing. They're on that same vibe as like Parquet Courts and that sort of style of music. And I probably first listened to them today. Really, really enjoyed it. Like I said, that it's got that cool New York hipster stuff without being from New York. You know what I mean?
100%, yeah.
I'm glad they that makes were, sense.
Yeah, definitely. So, like, it's really cliched at the minute. I mean, I don't know whether it is to everyone else, but it seems like, and we're you know, guilty of it just as much as anyone. But like, the post-punk tag seems to be so everywhere at the minute.
Just
like,
chuck it on a new band.
Chuck it on a. Is it a group of white blokes dressed like their dads? Chuck them on a post-punk, you know, vibe. Yeah, is it four blokes looking angry and they're all white and they're dressed like their dads? Yes, stick it on. And that's nothing against, you know, white people, white bands, blah, 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 blah. But yeah, that just seems to be the vibe at the minute. Like, you know, Enemy will jump on it. I say Enemy as if like I'm reading the Enemy. But yeah, and there's like a lot of bands who sound similar, and they're trying to ape the whole, not that they were originators in any sense, but they're trying to ape the whole Joe Talbot thing and, you know, be like, I look kind of hard and I've got a gruff voice. That's the band. So like this was like quite a bit before then, but even still, you know, all this sort of thing goes back ages and, you know, back to the late 70s and 80s. But Duds were just like, they were like my kind of first like footing into that sort of thing. And they seemed to play Manchester quite a lot because they're a northern band. And they were just the thing that I always liked about them was like you could see them in like a club basement and they'd be playing to like an absolutely rammed room, and it would always feel like, because I'm sure you might be in the same boat, but like going to so many gigs and for yourself putting so many gigs on, there are times when you can watch a band and it can be like, oh, this is great, but what am I having for tea?
Yeah I'm feeling a little bit sort of to the side of what's going on.
Yeah, you go like, oh shit, I wonder what if I'm going to have enough time to get another pint or whatever. Whereas every time I watched Duds, it was like, this is what I'm watching, 40 minutes, that'll
full
do.
Attention, like.
Yeah, definitely. And like one of the things I liked, it's just like, yeah, like you say, like this hip, like New York type band, even though they're from the North. And just like, so like artistically interesting. And they were doing this post-punk thing, but it was just like, I don't think at any stage they were thinking like, you know, because it seems like quite a few bands at the minute are thinking, we'll ape this style and then we'll get big. And it does work. But yeah, like they seem to be like, fuck that. we're just going to carry on and do as we do. Yeah. Like, I don't think there was even a campaign for the second album. I think they just released it.
Yeah.
And that was it.
For all intents and purposes, they look like the most boring band on the planet. And like, sure, whether that's by design or not, like, I mean, in a really respectful way, I like it when a band sell themselves because of their music or because of their live show. They don't have to have a gimmick or something like that, which sometimes that comes with on top of the live show and the music anyway. It's not a gimmick, it's something that you do. Like, we talk about Falls taking their shirts off and stuff like that. To me, that wasn't a gimmick. That was the live show. That's part of the whole thing. I mean, I'd watch them
sexy,
run around with...
Sexy, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. I'd watch them run around with their shirts on, but the press for Duds was just like them, all six of them in grey monochrome t-shirt or button-up shirt and trousers, and that was it. And I was like, that's a band who knows that you're going to listen to them. They don't care about that stuff. I mean, they probably did. There was definitely a thought in there somewhere behind it. But
you know what? I mean, I don't know if there was, because, like, yeah, you're exactly right.
They all just dressed the same one day and were like, oh, this is class.
I reckon they just turned up for every gig and they were like, not again. The 250th show in a row. But, like, yeah, like, they were, I think they started out and they were always like white shirts tucked into slacks. Like, again, that New York hipster thing.
Yeah, pack of cigarettes in the roll up of your sleeve.
Yeah.
Switchblade in the other one.
Yeah. And, like, after that, it was like khaki, like short sleeve army type surplus outfits. And, like, yeah, they looked. So, yeah, I suppose they looked a bit boring. But also, they looked like none of them were in the same band in a way. But also, what I loved about them so much was that you could go to a show and the guy who played, I might be wrong, but like trumpet, because there's a bit of brass involved, but I can't remember whether it's a trumpet or a cornet or whatever. And like, that guy could not be at the next show. It could be someone entirely different. not in like the armed way where is that guy actually in the band, blah, blah, blah. But like, I just loved how they shapeshifted. Like, I went to one show and the drummer, I think his name was Niv, like, had a cast on and he was walking around the venue before the show. And I was like, that's the drummer.
And how, like, how is he going to get away with that? Like,
and he just had a cast on his arm. And like, when the show started, there was this little long-haired guy behind the kit who was brilliant. And Niv was just stood to one side with like a tiny kit. And he only had one stick and he was just going mental on it. And like, it was like, these guys just, like, it's all up here and it's just got to come out. And, you know, like I said, you know, they're going to fill the room, but at the same time, they're not bothered about moving up a trajectory or anything like that. But I assume anyway. And like, yeah, like, so he was battering this kit and then you had this new guy on. And then like the next show, I went to see him in Liverpool, at Liverpool Psych Fest. And this guy was on again, he had like a cast on his hand. And I was like, this guy keeps doing his hand.
He needs to be
and,
way
like,
more careful.
Yeah. And like, so he was again on a stand-up kit and he was like hitting it as hard as possible. And the drummer was like this huge guy who looked like he was in the craze. And like, he was brilliant. And it was like, where's the guy with long hair? And like, he was the drummer. And then like, all of a sudden the guitarist was someone new. And then towards their later shows, I remember seeing them at, I saw him a few times when they had this guy in the band and it was a guy that literally looked like Ned Flanders, but our age, like, had the specs, had the ginger mustache and the ginger like cropped hair.
Nice.
And it was like, at this stage, I think like they might have been wearing like sweaters. Mm-hmm. And like, he was wearing like the sweater. And I was like, it's Flanders.
Oakley, and like,
yeah. And like, he was incredible. And like, so he played, I think, the trumpet as well. Mm. And maybe there was like three people. I want to say at one stage they had a sax, but I'm not sure if that's true. But like, you could literally go and see him. And outside of the drummer who always broke his arm and the guitarist and the vocalist, and I think the bass player and the other guitarist, the other people involved might be completely different. And I just love that sort of like chop change. Kind of style. And they were the only UK band to sign to Castleface, which is that label in the States run by the guy from the OCs. And you'd think that all this would be like, they're going to be massive in a certain circle.
Yeah.
And then like they just fizzled out and two of the guys started another band. But like, yeah, it felt like every show you went to was like particularly special. And like, I went to see them at the Pier Hat in Manchester, which is like a really loved venue. And for whatever reason, the show time, they didn't go on until like maybe an hour and a half after they were supposed to go on,
mm-hmm.
which is, you know, as a promoter in your head, I'm sure that's nuts. But
I went silent for a second there because I was like, that's a nightmare. Like, I sat there for a moment. I was like, the two festivals that I run, that I ran at the Flapper, if it was an hour and a half behind, I think I might have just thrown myself in the canal.
Yeah.
I'd be like, I can't do it. I can't.
But I seemingly was the only person who was like, fucking hell. And the reason that I was annoyed particularly, and this is so like such a boring backstory to it, but so Nick, again, from Trojan Horse, he's got a dog called Marv, as you might have seen on Instagram. Yep. We were looking after Marv at the time, and I was living in Whalley Range in Manchester. And some of our friends in Chorlton were like, we'll look after him because, you know, you're going to a gig. And I was like, that's great. Thanks. I'll be back by 10. And like, Duds was supposed to go on at like 9:30. And I think they ended up going on at 11.
Oh.
And like, even though they only played like, you know, 30 minutes or whatever, they were, as much as you can enjoy a dog being around your house and like, you know, playing with it and stuff, you get tired of it after a while. If it's not your dog.
Especially if it's not yours, yeah.
If it's not your dog and you don't know where it's going to sleep that night. So they were texting me and being like, when's this gig finished? And I was like, they haven't even started yet. But this kind of ties in with like, you know, the whole idea of the podcast in that, think about that now, like a Friday night, a venue that's busy as anything. And at about 11 PM when everyone's pissed, the headline band goes on.
Going on, yeah.
And it's like, they already create like that sort of, they don't create a party atmosphere, but because the songs are so raw and it's so like moving and, you know, the room gets sweaty and all the rest of it, like it was kind of a culmination of they kind of let, you know, like the room
boil itself up. Yeah. And
just
need to go like.
So at the time I was like, this is a nightmare. Whereas now that sounds like an incredible night where you could just like not think about things, not think about little Marv sat at my friend's house.
Pining for you.
Yeah.
I bet he hasn't spoken to you since, has he, Marv?
He always gives me the cold shoulder. but yeah, like thinking about it now, like it would be an incredible thing to go and watch Duds specifically, but you know, because they're not together anymore. But like, yeah, every time you saw them, they were just like so inventive, you know, so tight, just really like working on that post-punk thing. But not in a current trend way. And yeah, they were just such a great band. Even like doing daft shit, like they were called Duds, and then they were called D.U.D.S.
Yeah.
So like, that's a completely different, you have to search them on a different thing and like, just not caring, do you know what I mean? And
yeah.
Like I say, I don't think there was any press for the second album. They just put it out. Like, I remember seeing someone on Twitter go, I've got the new Duds record. And I was like, oh, is that out? And going to Piccadilly Records and buying it there and then and just being like, this is great. And I don't know anyone else who like, you know, had bought it because it was other than on Twitter. And it was like, yeah, it was kind of just like, here's the album. And then I think they weren't together much long after that. So, but yeah.
I suppose that goes back to the whole like self-awareness of when you were talking about Flesh. The guys in Duds could be like, we know we're good, not in an arrogant way. It's just, we know what we do and we do it well. And I guess like there is that, I don't want to use the word gimmick. I can't really think of another word for it right now, but that whole of having other people in the band that you don't know who's going to be. It's not very often you go to see a band that you love and you don't know who's going to be in the band. That's I think that's a really cool and sort of unique thing to be running with. But
and for them to still smash it, and it not seem like anything's changed. So they could be like a 4-piece, they could be a 7-piece, you know, whatever. And it kind of reminds me in a way, excuse me, of so the label who they were on for their first album, Castleface. So OC's that band. Like I've missed, the first time I saw them, I missed like 10 minutes of the show because I went out after support to go and, you know, get a beer or do whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And normally between bands, it can be, well, in the case of that Dutch show, it can be an hour and a half. Yeah. But normally between bands, you're looking at least half an hour, aren't you?
Yeah, yeah.
Normally, and like, yeah. They literally, as soon as the support went off, pushed all their gear to the front of the stage and started playing within like 10 minutes.
Nice.
And like, they've got the quickest turnaround. And it's, I just love that sort of like, whenever I've seen them, there's no backdrop or anything. And like, they just... It, not literally, obviously, but it's kind of like plug in, play, here's what we've got. Mm-hmm. You're probably going to enjoy it because you know why you're here.
Yeah.
Otherwise, it's going to be a shock. but it's kind of just like, you know, we're playing. There is going to be, you know, this like yeah. incredible live
we're
show.
We're going to happen. Like,
and then, yeah. And it's like,
and you're
like
gonna
you say,
like it,
and you're gonna like it, but not in an aggressive way, and certainly not in a way to say
they,
like
they
you
don't
know,
look like an aggressive bunch. I'll be honest with you.
I mean, there is a story I've heard about someone being aggressive in the band to a promoter, which I shan't share. But yeah, they aren't an aggressive band. I assume. I don't know. They're not together anymore. So
they could all be cage fighters now. For all
well,
the one that
looked like he was in the craze. So yeah. But yeah, great band.
Cool. We'll move on to the last band now. And it's a band that's been discussed on the podcast. And I'm only going to give you 2 minutes to talk about them because I have nothing else to say. Now, this is a band I know that you're a huge fan of because we were messaging earlier on in the week about them. So I'm going to give you longer than 2 minutes. But it's The Fall. We've had Damien from St. Pierre, you know, giving his love story where he first saw The Fall, and his response was, "This is shit." And that's a direct quote there. But what's your experience with The Fall? Where do they sit in your musical life then?
So, I mean, like I was saying to you, I must admit Damien hit it so nail on the head. Like, I don't know whether that's everyone's experience, but like, I'd always heard people talk about The Fall, and I'd always seen pictures of Marky Smith and just thought, I'm not sure,
yeah.
You know, and you'd heard like people would go to a show and they'd be like, that was dreadful. Or they'd go, that was incredible. And they'd be like, I'd rather go to a show, you know, where I know it's going to be good. Mm-hmm. And like, yeah, similar to Damien, it was like, went to see them as part of a festival in Liverpool at this fucking, I wish this venue shut down, but just because we went there to an all dayer and the only thing they had on was like pints of Guinness, pints of Carlin and a spirits bar. And that was
lovely.
It. What a show.
I mean, I'd kill for that right now though, to be fair. But
oh, that venue, as a venue, it's brilliant. Mm. It's a really good venue. I shan't name it. In Liverpool, but like it's a brilliant venue, and I've seen loads of good shows there. Like I've seen a horrifying Daughters show there, and then on the counteract, I've seen a guy called Alex Cameron there. Ben from Falls was actually at that show, shouting for him to take his top off. true story. But that fits in with like the vibe of Alex Cameron. But yeah, this awful venue, but like. We went to this all dayer, and at the time, again, this was filled with bands who were like very formative for us. So like, we were going to watch like bands like Cagoule and Tiger Cub and Eagles. And it was a really good all dayer. Hookworms were playing. And it was headlined by The Fall, and we were like all these good bands. And there's this band from Salford on who are supposed to be really good. This'll be great. This'll be brilliant. And me and a mate were like, so Hookworms were like incredible, and there was incredible visuals and incredible light show, and the music was just like completely like, you know, transcendent. Mm-hmm. And like, we were like, let's have another can of Cold Carlin. I think we'd moved on to like Jack and Cokes for a tenner or something. But anyway, we were waiting for The Fall to come on, and it was getting longer and longer, the wait was. And this was 2016 or 2017, I think. Mm-hmm. That can't be right. Surely
a couple of years before then, because I think Marky Smith passed away in 2018, I think.
2018. Maybe it was 2013 or 2014, but 2016 maybe. But yeah, long story short, you can edit all that out. long story
cheers,
short.
Man, I'll just do some more work.
Yeah. Long story short, like we were waiting for ages, and we were thinking, because with the trains from Liverpool, you can either go just to the last one, or you can wait till like 3 a.m. or whatever and get the very last one. And we were like, are we going to go? Are we going to stick? And then like, finally the band comes on without Marky Smith and like started playing, and they just looked like just any old blokes. They didn't look like a band. Mm. And we were just like, what is this? And then you could hear him mumbling, but you couldn't see him. And we were like, what is this? And like the crowd were going nuts.
Yeah.
And me and my friend Matt were just like, are we going to get this last train or what? And then eventually he just waddled on stage from a side curtain and he had like a carrier bag full of cans. And I think like the microphone was like kind just about draped into his hand. And like he was just going like, and like he walked on, and like this kid turned around to me and went, this is the best thing I've ever seen. And I was like, are you fucking mad? Like he was like, and like he just, I mean, he was obviously suffering, you know, issues with whether or not it was performative or what, but he was obviously suffering issues with, you know, alcohol and drug abuse and stuff. But like, yeah, like he just, the way he just wandered on, and he was just this old fellow with a bag of cans, a microphone on. And like, I don't know if you've been to Liverpool much, but like, there are so many karaoke like pubs where they're not a karaoke bar. They're just pubs that put the karaoke on. And it was like, we could go and watch this for now next door. And yeah, he came on and we pretty much looked at each other and went, nah, bugger this, you know, it's crap. And like, yeah, like years passed and like never gave them a second thought. We always just joked about like, because our other friend was like, oh, I'm going to see Falls in Salford. And we were like, they're crap, mate. They are crap. And then it wasn't until he passed, like proper, you know, cliched, that I was like, oh, maybe, you know, maybe there was something in there. There's all these things coming out. Every band that I like is saying a good thing about them or a bad thing about them.
Yeah. But at least something. And like
they're at least talking about it.
Yeah.
Like I was reading stories from people like the guy from Postwar Glamour Girls and Yard Act, where he was like, he's my hero. We went to support him and it was just the worst night of my life. And like, because obviously he was, you know, he was quite a bastard. And in no way is this me talking about him saying that he's like a hero or anything. He sounded like a horrid, you know, horrid guy, but like a very interesting guy. Mm. Do you know what I mean? And yeah, so like started dipping a toe tentatively after he passed and started going, actually, you know what? These guys are pretty good. And then like, it was literally, you start to like kind of get absorbed by it and you start to realize that you're not just liking the odd song, you're liking full albums, and you're searching out other albums, and then you go, fucking hell, and on the quiet, am I starting to become a Fall fan? And then you start to get like mildly obsessive about it a bit. Like, as I was saying to you the other week, I bought two books about them, and one is a book where they search for every member of the Fall.
Oh, yes.
Very entertaining. And the other book is from the former bass player. And like he was there for like 19 years. And, you know, we talk about duds and the band Shapeshift and they move about and all the rest of it. And, you know, you've got a drummer from who knows where. With the Fall, it was like they could be on tour and like Marky Smith would not like what the keyboard player had said in the car and be like, can you just go out here and get us some cigs at the petrol station?
And they just leave him behind.
And then he just leave him behind. Like, and there were stories like from the book where like, they'd go on a tour, they'd not even play a show, and they'd just drive off and leave someone behind. And it's like, it's horrible.
Yeah.
But like, it's such like folklore stuff, isn't it?
Almost like you can imagine a Blues Brothers style, we're going to get the band back together.
Like, yeah, it's fucking 60 odd members or something. But yeah, like,
I think it was 63, which is like, I mean, I had this the chat with Damien about him being in the same PS Snake Invasion and having different members joining other bands and things. It gives you a new lease of life as a band to like go in a different direction. But it seems like with the Fall, it was almost like the opposite of that, where just Marky Smith was like, I just want to get rid of someone. Like, I don't want more energy. I want less energy and someone else that I'm going to have to sling hook. Like,
yeah. Well, like, I think the brilliant thing about the book, the one where he's in search of everyone, is just the fact that, like, if someone was good, like, particularly good at an instrument, Marky Smith would be like, no chance. Play it. Like, I think one of his instructions to a drummer was just fucking hit it. which is like, you know, such like crap.
Yeah.
But like, and like, there'd be like, he'd come up with like, someone would go like, oh, my mate in the pub plays a guitar. And he'd be like, right, we're playing Reading next week. And it'd be like, something.
Get him in the van, like.
Yeah. And like, cause there was, I can't think whose manager it is, but it was either Reading or Glastonbury. And there was the manager of some band. And one of the players in like the fall was just marching backstage and going, we need a drummer. We need a drummer. We need a drummer. And this manager of a band who was there with the band was like, I can drum. And so he came on stage and was like the drummer for the fall during a huge festival. And it's like, that sort of shit is so nuts. But that sort of chaos is like, you know, brilliant. It might end up shit. And like, it might be, something where someone says it's the worst gig ever, but it could also be one of the best gigs ever. Do you know what I mean? And like,
do you remember shit gigs though? That's the thing. I think I say shit gigs. Like,
yeah,
I guess there wasn't, for all intents and purposes, there wasn't a bad fall show because everyone would remember that show because they were at that show. Like, yeah, you said you remember the first, you know, 25 seconds of watching Marky Smith come out like some kind of homeless dude. But like, I bet if you'd sat and watched the rest of the show, you could probably say to yourself, that was a rubbish show, but you'll always remember it. Like, because of that. And then there's, yeah, the enigma around everything that comes on with them. Again, like, I'm talking like I know anything about it. I know fuck squat about the fall because like, you can't scrape the surface really. Like you said, you have to get manically obsessive about them. I don't think there are many bands that are kind of like that. I guess, yeah, off the top of my head, I can't really think of any bands that are as like enigmatic and just almost mythical.
Yeah, for something that was so like, they weren't trying to push boundaries or anything.
Yeah,
I don't,
yeah. Also, I don't think he didn't want to do it in the first place. It just happened to be able to write some words on a napkin, and they meant something to some mad people in Manchester.
Well, I think that was the genius of it. Like, I think as much as he hated musicians, I think again, like Flesh, you know, with the knowing, they knew what the crack was.
Yeah.
He obviously knew, and he had these visions, and like, there are reports that he did know what he was talking about musically, but like, it's saying something that a band can like have an album that does really well, and then go in the studio and just record something that's utter dog shit, and then 10 years later have a run of albums that are brilliant. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
So I think it was literally, because there are, like we were saying with Tall Ships, it didn't quite happen with the second album, and they split up not long after. Mm. And there's certain bands that me and you both share a liking for where they will get to third album and they'll be like, fucking the ideas have gone.
Yeah.
Whereas these guys, I know you were talking about it with Damien, but like you said, how many studio LPs they've got. And even some of the ones that were later towards the end are brilliant.
Yeah.
And that sort of run of, like, I couldn't, like, I wouldn't choose to listen to a Dylan album. I love like the early stuff, but I wouldn't choose to listen to something from the 2000s. Whereas with The Fall, I might stick on Country on the Click or whatever, because they are like, they still maintain that stuff, and they can go from like anything from like some daft drum and bass to like rockabilly or whatever. And it's just, yeah, they just such an interesting band. And like, yeah, you get hooked in. And the whole thing about that book is that the guy says, like, I think like he has some marriage issues because he's thinking about The Fall
all the time. Like,
yeah. And similar to what you said with Tom from Goddamn, he was going, I've got 40 minutes. I'm going to listen to the Friends Experiment, which I think is longer than that. But like, do you know what I mean? He's not thinking, I'm going to go and have 5 minutes with
the missus. Like, yeah.
Yeah. I'm going to go and chat to the dog. I'm going to go and chat to the missus. Not saying one and the same. He has a dog is what I mean. Sorry. But yeah. So he's going to, you know, he's going to take the dog for a walk, and then he's going to come home. He's going to have tea with the missus. Like, instead, he will go, yeah, let's listen to I Am Curious Orange.
Mm.
And like, yeah, I think that sort of, for a bit, when I was reading two books at the same time and constantly listening to new albums, well, new to me anyway, I could see why someone might say, you know, it's becoming an obsession, but it's filtered out a little bit. But yeah, they are, it was a perfect memory at that time of that show in Liverpool. because I suppose that works into the legend of that sort of band, doesn't it? You know, but yeah, I wish I had seen them when they were good.
Yeah, just to sort of like bring it to a bit of an end, I guess. I wonder how many people were at that same gig as you, waiting around, obviously seeing Hookworms and seeing Tiger Cub and all these bands that we're fans of, and not ever listening to The Fall or being like, I don't know what to deal with this, and doing the same thing that you've done, where you turn around, you turn to Matt and gone, yeah, there's a train in 10, like, let's go. And then 5 years down the line, you've gone, oh, you know, I'll give them a go. And now, like, you could be, like I said, someone could be obsessed. You could have another person writing another book about trying to find all the places that The Fall had played and all this sort of stuff. And I guess they are one of those bands that, like, I was trying to think while you were talking there about other bands that I sort of maybe akin to, like, Sonic Youth and bands like that have got like a huge repertoire of music, not necessarily like studio albums, but they've been out there and they've done it for a very long time. Obviously chatting with James from Mutes, that you can become obsessed with bands like that. And I think it's a really admirable thing, because I'm really lazy when it comes to music. Like, I pretend I know everything, guys. This is why I have good guests on, because the guests are the ones who actually do know.
It's a blag, mate. It's all a blag.
That's all it is, yeah.
I think what's good about a band as well is it's good when there's a band who you can be a massive fan of and think that they've got albums that are just awful. Do you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
If you could, like, because if, say, like, Duds put out an album and it was a bit crap, you'd be like, oh, that's a shame. You know, and you might lose interest in that band. Whereas, like, if I'm going through The Fall record list, like, I think the one or two of the earlier ones, they're not my cup of tea personally. But you can still, like, go, yeah, fair play. They went down that route. And again, similar to Duds, they weren't thinking, like, you know, mainstream success and all the rest of it. Although I think they were probably very happy with, there's a particular portion of their career where it was like champagne on the rider every night and stuff, which I'm sure they were particularly happy about.
Yeah.
And like doing shows with ballet groups and stuff, which is very interesting, which you should look into. Like Damien was saying, that album I Am Curious Orange, there was like a ballet group involved with an artist, and it was all very interesting period in their lives and stuff. But yeah, a band that you can go, that album's shit, but this album's great, and this album's a life changer and all the rest of it. It's, yeah.
I mean, it's statistically, they've got to have a bunch of them, the amount of them they've got out there, though. So,
if you throw enough at the wall.
Exactly. Yeah. Something will stick eventually.
Yeah, definitely.
I'm going to leave it there, because I know we could go on and on and on and on and on and on and on. And I've had an absolute pleasure catching up with you and seeing your face. I know the guys are going to record this over Zoom, but it's nice to see your face. Your beard's looking mighty. Your hair's looking amazing.
I've gone the other way to you. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I did have a beard about 3 weeks ago, and then so now I'm just gonna have a trim, and now I look 14 again. but yeah, Andy, thank you again for your time this evening. We're running at 10 p.m. here in the UK now, guys. And if you look out to your left, you will see probably me and Andy going and have our dinner. But
yeah, but thank you so much for your time, man. Love the podcast. Thank you, mate.
Thank you very much, and have a great evening.